any speech that might influence elections. For pro-life headlines delivered to your email address daily, sign up at lifenews.com. This has been Life News Radio.
Catholic Radio in Metro Detroit. This is 990 WDEO, Ypsilanti, Detroit, or on the internet at WDEO.net.
Hudson, welcome to Church and Culture. This show is devoted to exploring the interaction between our faith and our culture. Each week, I will talk with expert guests on topics ranging from literature, art, and music to politics, liturgy, spirituality, and education. Thank you for joining us. My guest for this hour is Jerry Usher. Jerry is probably already well known to most listeners to Catholic Radio. He's been in the Catholic radio business in one way or another for over 35 years. He presently has a show on the EWTN Global Network entitled Vocation Boom, and we're going to be talking about vocations with Jerry Usher. We're going to be talking about the situation with vocations around the country in various dioceses. We're talking about the use of priests from overseas. And I think this will turn out to be a very interesting discussion. Jerry, welcome to Church and Culture.
Thank you, Gil. Great to talk with you again. It's been too long.
Yeah, and you know, I noticed that that you have done so much for Catholic radio in terms of helping Catholic radio stations be acquired, helping them to raise funds to be operated, just basically being a kind of a Johnny Appleseed in the Catholic radio world. So we ought to thank you for that.
Well, I'm grateful for your thoughts, and I would just ask people to pray for me as I try and persevere in this little calling that God has given me. But, yeah, it's been a great blessing. I've been in radio almost 35 years altogether, about a little over half of that in Catholic radio. And you're right, God has kind of led me here and then led me there. And, you know, as soon as the little sprout comes out of the ground, he says, okay, now I want you over here.
So yeah, sometimes it's kind of hard to perceive those sprouts where they are.
It is, yeah. But thankfully now, as you know, Gil, we're at a place where Catholic radio is, you know, for years I used to say it was, you know, in the infant stage, then the toddler stage. Now I think we're maybe in the adolescent stage. I'm talking about overall. You know, some networks do an exceptional job. Others still need a little bit of work. You know, they need a little hand-holding along the way, but that's why there are organizations and individuals out there who can kind of assist those people who may not have a radio or a media background so that we can put the best possible product out there for the Lord, because he deserves it.
Talking with Jerry Usher first just about Catholic radio, and then we're going to get on to the question of priestly vocations. Jerry, when I first started to learn about Catholic radio, I guess maybe 15 years ago or more, there were maybe 50 or 60 Catholic radio stations. How many are there today?
Well, that's a hard number to pin down precisely for some very good reasons, and one of those reasons, Deal, is because there are new stations going on the air with some regularity. So I think I was talking with the head of radio at EWTN the other day, and he said they're close to the 300 mark in terms of their...
That's what I thought. I thought it was about 300 at this point.
Yeah, and that's there may be more than that when you consider relevant radio, and then there's Radio Maria. So at this point, it's a number that only God knows, but, yeah, it's got to be close or beyond 300 by now. It's really remarkable.
Well, it certainly has grown rather quickly. Of course, we all know the evangelicals were way out ahead and basically owned the religious radio market in a very substantial way, as you know. But Catholic radio is beginning to make its inroads with its own particular point of view, its own message, one that obviously is complementary to evangelicals. And so we're really joined them in evangelizing the culture. They have their vocations problems, too, but we won't get into that. Jerry, you were a seminarian for a while. I was a seminarian, but at a Protestant seminary in Princeton. I even was a minister for a while, very young, very long ago. But was it your experience in seminary that has sort of led you to be sort of embrace this mission of vocations to the priesthood?
Yeah, that's precisely it. I'm kind of a slow study deal, so it took me, I would say, 7 or 8 years of quote-unquote discernment and prayer and spiritual direction and talking to priests and talking to my family and all that before I, you know, from the time I started thinking about the priesthood until I was officially in formation, and that began in 1989 and lasted for 6 years. And so, you know, for 6 years of my life, I ate and drank and slept and thought and lived, in essence, the priesthood. I wasn't a priest yet, but that's the whole idea of formation, is that, you know, it's on your mind, it's on your heart, that's your goal, that's your target. So during that time, I just had a real vision, you know, a burden, kind of a passion put on my heart by the Lord to help encourage other men to answer that call, to help support them, motivate them, inspire them. So a friend and I, we were at Franciscan University of Steubenville as college students. We started, and he's now a priest, by the way, thanks be to God. We started a simple 8-page black and white newsletter that we called In Persona Christi. It was down and dirty. We did it in our spare time and with our spare change and just threw it into boxes and mailed it out to seminaries and care of the rector and a little note saying, we hope you'll pass these out to your guys. And that was pretty much the extent of it. But the vision was a lot bigger than that. It was for using all of the media, radio, TV. We didn't have social media at the time, so God has given us that. And so there's so many ways now that we can encourage men. We can reach right where they are. I've heard it called the modern day Areopagus, you know, where Paul can go and the meeting, like, you know, the exchange of ideas. Well, social media are kind of like that today, don't you think?
Oh, it's definitely that. I'm talking with Jerry Usher, well known among Catholic radio listeners and among Catholic radio owners, who he has helped raise money, a lot of money over the years. You know, can I make an observation about vocations? While I was publishing and editing Crisis Magazine for 15 years, we ran a number of articles on vocations. And, you know, we pointed out the steady decline since the 50s, which everybody knows about. We pointed out the fact that the pedophilia crisis, if you want to call it that, because it really wasn't that, but we won't get into that, didn't have a huge impact on vocations. What seemed to have the most impact on vocations was diocesan leadership, particularly the bishops and particularly whatever priest was put in charge of vocations in that diocese. And, you know, where you found no vocations, it was clear that there was something wrong in the diocese. Where you found a lot or at least substantial number of vocations, you could look at the bishop and understand right away, or look at the vocations director and understand right away why young men would be attracted into the priesthood. Now, do you think that's a fair observation?
I think it is. I know you've heard this phrase too, Deal, and that is the diocese or religious order gets the vocations it deserves. And, you know, I'll just leave it at that. But
why? I mean, you can go a few floors below that. I don't think you'll offend anybody.
Well, you know, I mentioned that my formation years were 1989 to 95, and I had there were six of the best years of my life. I will tell you that the fraternal bond with the guys, we had a common purpose. That was kind of at the start deal of what we're seeing now. We're seeing the fruit now of, you know, a lot of guys kind of suffered through some difficult formation environments and some, I'm just going to put it quite simply, I know guys who, you know, were persecuted even by, you know, people who were supposed to be supporting them in their vocation.
Yes, it's too often the case in the last 30 years.
That's a good point. But you're right, and you know, we could talk a lot about that, and I'll be happy to go, you know, as long as you want on that particular point. But, I mean, what I'm seeing right now, here's the mental image I have of today's young seminarians and priests, okay? You got this bombed out rubble, and there's smoke and dust and embers and all this, and out of the smoke, these guys are walking almost like superheroes. I'm wondering, where are these guys coming from, you know, with the breakdown of the family? And, you know, premarital sex and drugs and social media and tweeting and all of these temptations and allurements, somehow they're hearing this call. And these are not guys who couldn't get a girlfriend, couldn't keep a job. You know that deal.
Of course.
These are guys who are, these are the cream of the crop. So, yeah, we.
I've heard the laments of various Catholic women.
Yeah, the at Steubenville, it was the pre-theology household, and when a guy broke up with a girl to go into it, you know, she was a koinonia widow. And the other was, the opposite was the case. If a guy left the pre-theology household to date, she was jokingly referred to as a chalice chipper, you know, so it works both ways.
So your radio show, Vocation Boom, which is broadcast on EWTN, I think it's on Sunday and repeated on Tuesday. Remind me of that.
That's a TV show that just started. Our first broadcast was last Sunday, and that airs Sundays at 11 a.m. Eastern. And then for the night owls, the insomniacs who love the priesthood, they can catch it at 2:30 a.m. Tuesday mornings on EWTN.
Okay, TV show called Vocation Boom. There's also a website, vocationboom.com. Very easy to remember.
Yep.
First show is last Sunday. And I assume you'll have shows from here forward on Sunday repeated on very early Tuesday morning, which, of course, you know, on the West Coast is kind of competes with The Tonight Show.
Yeah, I know. Well, and there is a third airing. It's Thursdays at 5:30 p.m., so right, you know, in the dinner time, right as a lead into EWTN News Nightly, so Thursdays at 5:30.
Now, is it all also played on the radio as well?
No, it is not, because we have our radio show on Saturdays at 5 Eastern time.
Well, tell me about that show.
Well, I mentioned my background in radio. It's interesting, the saying that God writes straight with crooked lines deal, I don't think you're going to find a more, I don't want to say a perfect example, but a better example of that.
Oh, I'm the most crooked line I know. Keep going.
I mean, for giving someone experiences to prepare them for where they are now. In high school, I wanted to play sports. I wanted to go to Notre Dame and play basketball. I quickly realized that wasn't going to happen. How can I be involved in sports? I thought, well, I could be a teacher. But then, you know, you're around school all the time, and I was kind of sick of school for a while. So I said, well, how about broadcasting? So a friend and I got together, and we all played boy sports, so we would rig up these headsets and reel-to-reel machines, and we would do play-by-play as we videotaped the girls' sports. So then I went to broadcasting school right after high school. I had my first job when I was 18. So lots of years in radio. I had the 6 years in priestly formation, 10 years of hosting Catholic Answers Live. So all of this comes together, I think, to prepare me for this calling that God has to run Vocation Boom. And all that to say, now, the website, we're coming up on our fifth anniversary of the website launch, September 14th. It was just a year and a half later that the radio show started on EWTN. And, you know, we're on every week. It's been going 3.5 years now. And just a lot of great guests. It's just fantastic to hear what's going on with vocations around the country and around the world, for that matter.
Well, Jerry, I guess it's inevitable that I'm going to ask you this question, and that is, is there a vocation boom going on?
Well, yeah, in our humble estimation, and I would say in our experience, there certainly is.
Let's start with a kind of parameter. Can you recite any statistics that would help us understand what the sort of baseline is that we're talking about?
Yeah, I mean, obviously if we go back, you know, 40, 50 years, the numbers were a lot larger than they are right now in terms of seminarians and priests, and that just, you know, took a huge nosedive, you know, in the last couple of generations after Vatican II especially. But things are definitely on the rise, slower than, you know, some people might like. But here's a couple. Let me give you a couple of examples, three
okay.
for that I can think of right off the top of my head. I heard the other day, we actually reposted on the Vocation Boom Facebook page an article from, I think it was the Diocese of Wichita. They are now, this fall, they have sent 62 men into various stages of formation for the priesthood, which is a staggering number for that diocese.
And you know something, Jerry? I know that diocese very well because I taught out there for a couple of while and knew two of the previous bishops, including Bishop Olmsted. And from the very first time I went out there, and that was 20 years ago, they had a tremendous vocations program, which was carried on by Bishop Olmsted. I forget who the latest bishop of Wichita is, and I apologize for that. But what you're telling me doesn't surprise me that it's going on in a place like Wichita, which has really focused on this.
Well, let me give you another example that might surprise you a little bit, and that's the Archdiocese of Portland, Oregon, where I happened to be a seminarian back in 89 to 95. And there were years we had 18, 20, maybe 22 men total in formation. You're talking from, you know, pre-theology up through fourth theology. And I think the 6 years that I was in formation, maybe half of those years, we had no ordinations, okay? So there might have been every other year one, maybe we had 1 year where there were two. Well, in the last 4 to 5 years, they have ordained 50. They've ordained around 50 men in the last just 4 to 5 years, and they have about 50, 40 to 50 currently in formation. And now you're talking about, we know the Pacific Northwest, you know, all the
yeah.
reputation it has, you know, the most unchurched, the godless, I mean, anything in the culture of death.
And well-deserved. I mean, well-deserved.
Yeah, well, it is well-deserved. But here's one more story. Just this past Saturday.
And by the way, that does surprise me. I've been to Portland a number of times, met with Catholics there, and it does surprise me, but it's also thrilling. I noticed they got a new bishop in 2013, but it sounds like this swell in vocation was already underway.
It was. It's astonishing when you think about the culture and the just the church climate overall. But here, this past Saturday, I'm on my radio show, I'm hosting, and my guest is a transitional deacon from St. Vincent de Paul Seminary in Boynton Beach, Florida, going to be ordained a priest in about 9 months. We're having a great
time. And there's a seminary down there, Boynton Beach.
Yeah, that's where he attends.
Mm-hmm.
And so my call screener writes me a note and says, Archbishop Michael Sheehan of Santa Fe is on the line and wants to talk to you.
That's interesting. Okay.
How do I prove that this is really him? And so I figure, well, I'll take a chance. And it was him. I've known him for many years. And
yeah.
He came on the air and he says, I wanted to confirm what you're saying. He says, there is a vocation boom in my archdiocese. Those are his words. And he's got 40-some-odd men, 45 men
wow.
in formation right now. He's going to ordain 9, I think he said, either this fall or next year. So these are just a few examples. And he himself said every seminary that he sends his guys to is full, every one of them. So
what seminaries, tomorrow, off the top of your head, do you believe he's talking about? What seminaries?
Oh, gosh. You know, he
obviously, he's talking about Mount St. Mary's, for one.
It could be, yeah. I mean, but the thing is, Deal, across the board, our seminaries are pretty much full to capacity.
Now, wait a minute, Jerry. I'm going to call you on this one.
Go ahead. Call me.
Because, I mean, at least every now and then, say, for example, in Pennsylvania outside Philadelphia, you hear of what were formerly very large seminaries being put up for sale or being scaled down. It's one thing to fill up a seminary to the size of which would have been normal in the 50s, but it's another thing to fill up a seminary which has been scaled down to a certain level over the last 20 years.
Yeah, I agree with you. And that's why I said most of them are, I said, pretty much full capacity. I know not all of them are. I spent a year at St. Charles Seminary in Philadelphia. I'd love to see that place full because they have hundreds of rooms. But the point is, a number of them, let me just say, a number of them are bringing in temporary housing. They just can't accept all the guys. Monsignor David Toops, who's on our advisory board, the rector of the seminary in Boynton Beach, has told me, he says, we have our greatest enrollment ever, and it's just continuing to grow. So, I guess.
And there you have some very strong, apostolic leadership like Archbishop Winsky. Just doing a great job. As well as some of the other bishops in Florida. So, well, I am really, really personally pleased to hear this report. And I, in the last few years, had not been keeping track of it, of this, the way I used to. And so it sounds as if we have bottomed out in terms of the deterioration in vocations. Sounds like we're beginning to build up more in areas where there is strong apostolic leadership and focus being put on vocations. But would this be true to say across the board in all the 190-odd dioceses, or is it just spotty at this point?
I'd say it's better than spotty, but I wouldn't say, I don't know for sure, but I don't think it's wall-to-wall at this point. And I think that gets to your point, what you were talking about earlier. There are still some areas where, I'm just going to say it, I don't think the leadership in the diocese or the archdiocese or a particular religious order takes seriously enough the cultivation of vocations and then the need to look for the right kind of men. You know what I'm talking about?
Well, you know, I'm gonna say what you don't want to say. Okay?
Okay.
It's not just that they don't take it seriously, it's just that they are not witnessing to the type of Catholicism that wins young men to service. In other words, if you want to become a social worker, become a social worker. If you want to become a psychologist or psychiatrist, do that. That's not what being a priest is.
Yeah. No, you're right. And I'm glad you're there to do my dirty work here on the program.
I'm used to being shot at, Jerry.
I know. And I've got to tread lightly deal, if you know what I mean.
I do. And I think that, you know, that's appropriate. And but the good news is, in, like you said, in places like Florida, in places like, you mentioned Portland, you mentioned Wichita, and you mentioned Santa Fe, which are, by the way, very different places culturally and geographically. So that would suggest that this may be happening in a variety of places and not just in the places you and I might predict.
Yeah, I would use the words in spite of. I would say in spite of, and then fill in the blank, whatever circumstance you want to put in there. In spite of so many things, this is happening in a lot of places. And this is maybe poor juxtaposition, and I don't mean it this way, but my own bishop, Gerald Barnes, I'm in the Diocese of San Bernardino, he is so supportive of my ministry. He really is thrilled that I moved into the diocese a couple years ago. We have over 50 men in formation in this diocese. And, you know, you wouldn't think. I mean, if you were to think, you'd think Peoria, you'd think Arlington, you'd think Lincoln, you know, when you talk about those dioceses that are probably kind of cutting edge and leading the way in terms of vocations. But here in, you know, little old San Bernardino Diocese in California, we've got 50. And, you know, what accounts for that? I don't know. I mean, the grace of God is really moving powerfully today.
How much does it have to do with the leadership of the papacy since 1978, including Pope Francis in the last few years? Seems to me there's been some pretty powerful leadership there.
There's no doubt. I mean, when I was in formation, John Paul, I mean, he was my hero for a lot of reasons, but I really look to him as a model of priestly and shepherdly guidance. And so I've talked to countless young men who were seminarians, many are now priests, who refer to themselves as the JP2 generation.
Yeah, I actually, when I was doing Crisis, I actually coined the phrase John Paul II Catholic, John Paul II Priest. And I don't know if I was the first, but we used it, and I think it's turned out to be a kind of accurate description.
Exactly. You know, and Pope Benedict, you know, led in a little bit of a different way, a little different style, but he too appealed to the sensibilities of these young men for what they're looking for, the sublimity, the dignity, the beauty, the glory, the liturgy, all of these things. And now Pope Francis, you know, I mean, he's just, young people want a cause to believe in, and they want to sacrifice him.
Well, they're by their very nature idealistic, which is both good and bad.
I mean,
let's face it. For example, when Stalin and Hitler, they both did it. When they were trying to establish their control over their countries, they went right at young people. They made young people, let's say from high school age up through their 20s, the focus of their effort. Why? Because they tapped into their idealism. They tapped into the ability that young people have to completely devote themselves to an ideal, kind of uncritically in a way. You think that's fair?
Absolutely. I think it's right on the mark. And I've often made the analogy between, you know, you look at young men, especially boys, who join gangs. You know, why do they join
a
gang? It's because they're being challenged, you know, their manhood, they're being called out. Here, you want to belong? Here, there's a price to belonging.
Mm-hmm.
Now go out and prove that you want to belong here. We need to, you know, present that same challenge to our young men and women, obviously not with the same goals in mind, but we need to go to them and, you know, stop.
They need to join our gang.
Pizza and balloons, yeah.
The Catholic Church gang, the priest gang. I'm talking with Jerry Usher about his apostolic effort to increase vocations called vocationboom.com. It's a TV show on EWTN that shows on Sundays and Tuesdays and Thursdays. And we'll be right back to talk to Jerry after this message.
You might have seen a copy of the Michigan Catholic newspaper sitting in the back of your church. But have you picked one up lately? If so, you'll find we're not only Catholic news you can trust, but Catholic news you can use. Find out where your favorite priest is being assigned, read our popular Q&A columns, and learn more about your faith by reading the Michigan Catholic. Talk to your pastor or call 313-224-8000 or visit themichigancatholic.com.
This is Lavinia Spirito for Catholic Way Bible Study. When Jesus says in the Beatitudes, "Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God," He is blessing those of us who are coherent and consistent and committed in our faith from the inside out. The commitment we have in our hearts is readily observable in our behavior. No duplicity, no hypocrisy. The Catechism of the Catholic Church says there are those who have attuned their intellects and wills to the demands of God's holiness and are pure in heart, body, and faith. No compromises, no straddling the fence. No being someone in church and someone entirely different in the world. Purity of heart is a precondition for the vision of God. Purity of heart calls us to full integration of God's kingdom in our whole lives. Are you sold out for the Lord?
Catholic Way Bible Study. Peace, power, purpose. Find out more at cwbs.org.
Hi, this is Deacon Tom Lowy, Development Director for Ave Maria Radio, letting you know that our fall membership drive is September 8th through the 12th this year. That's the week after Labor Day, and we need volunteers to make this drive successful. If you can spare a couple of hours during any of the days of the drive, that's September 8th through the 12th, give us a call at 877-288-1077 or email our volunteer director, Cheryl, by going to volunteer@avemariaradio.net.
I'm back with Jerry Usher, who is the founder and president of a very important and influential media company, which I didn't mention in the original introduction as Third Millennium Media, but also has created an apostolate entitled vocationboom.com. It's Vocation Boom, but the website is vocationboom.com. And he's got a TV show on EWTN of the same name. He's had a weekly radio show on the same issue for quite a while, and now a TV show. Now, you went to Franciscan University. Did you ever happen to read Crisis Magazine while you were there when I was publishing it?
You know, I did, Dio. As a matter of fact, I used to want to, you know, I'd have various opportunities to be maybe sitting, waiting for appointments. Or
now, where did you read it? Well, did you read it in the library, in your room? What was that about reading Crisis in a sauna? What was that I heard?
The main place I read it was they had a sauna there, and it took forever for the sauna just to heat up to give you a decent.
Well, you know, I should have known that. I would have ordered better paper, more suitable for reading in the sauna.
Well, I was going to talk to you about that, but
okay, it probably got pretty crinkled up in the humidity. But that kind of paper is really expensive, so we couldn't do that. But you'll recall that we stayed on top of the issue of vocations. Let's switch over now to religious life, to the orders. There seem to be, again, a handful of orders that are pulling in lots and lots of vocations, while there are the majority of orders that were great and influential in sort of the pre-60s era of the church that seem to be gradually dying out. They have lots of property and lots of money, but they don't seem to be attracting many vocations. Is that fair?
Yeah, it probably mirrors, you know, what's going on in the diocesan priesthood to a certain extent. I can point to at least a couple of examples of successes. You know, the Eastern Province Dominicans, Father Benedict Kroll is currently their vocation director, good friend of Vocation Boom, and they're getting 10 to 15 new novices a year and, you know, ordaining 8 to 10 guys a year now. So they got something really, really good going on. I've talked to several other religious, the Western Province Dominican Vocation Director was just on my show, Father Steve Mayakawa. Their numbers are starting to pick up a little bit. Again, it's not, they're not having their door, you know, beaten down by, you know, with 100 screaming guys outside saying, hey, let us in. But, you know, that day, it may not be that far down the road. And if you look at other countries' deal, in Nigeria, for example, throughout Africa, they have so few funds that they may have 200 guys apply per year, and they can only take 8 or 10 of them. It's tragedy, really.
So there's a big demand in Africa that can't be met because of the lack of resources?
That's from what I understand.
What about in the Far East? In fact, I'm going to China pretty soon, and I'm interested in, for example, the Catholic Church in China. Are you keeping track of those kind of statistics?
I don't follow China that much. I know in certain parts of Asia there definitely is a vocation boom going on. China, you know, it's I don't know that we, you know, that's a kind of a rare situation, as you know. You know,
yeah, it's got those parallel churches.
Patriotic, yeah. So,
well, we seem to get a lot of priests in the United States from the Philippines, correct?
Yes, the Philippines, and certainly we're seeing Tanzanian priests and Nigerian priests, and of course, you know, we're getting a lot of priests from Mexico and Central and South America. So, you know, thank God. I mean, when there's a shortage and the Holy Spirit needs to move, I mean, he's going to fill that however, you know, wherever people are answering that call, I guess.
What do you think of folks who come out of mass grumbling? They couldn't understand the priest from Nigeria or the priest from the Philippines. Their English is, say, at least a little unfinished. What do you think of that grumble?
The politically correct thing to say would be, well, you know, at least they're giving us the Eucharist. But I will say this: I've shared that frustration. I don't know anybody who, you know, if you go to Mass, We receive the body and blood of Christ. That's the source and summit. That's the highlight. That's the reason we go. But we want to be fed on the readings. We want to be fed through the homily. And so, yeah, there definitely be a level of frustration. What we do about it, I don't know. I mean, I would say more than anything, we've got to thank God that these men are here. I mean, there's a local parish near where I go that, you know, the priest has done a fantastic job to improve his English, and so he's much more understandable now. But I think we're going to have to deal with some of these minor frustrations to get the magnificent results, if you will, certainly the Eucharist being chief among them.
And I can just hear the trads now yelling, well, if the Mass was still in Latin, it wouldn't matter. you know, Latin is Latin. And, you know, they would have a point, actually. When the church had a universal language, then it didn't matter where the priest was from or even where the worshiper was from. He, she were going to hear exactly the same thing wherever they were.
Yeah, well, language doesn't eliminate accents necessarily. You know, there would still be, you know,
bad Latin.
Poland who have Polish accent. Yeah, I mean, it's just.
In fact, I think Chaucer has a character, a priest character, who is criticized for having bad Latin, if I recall. And you know, I share that grumble a little bit, but I think my gratitude toward somebody accepting that life, especially in the contemporary world where the, you know, the microscope is on them for any false move they make, and they, it seems like any accusation made toward a priest or a bishop is automatically believed by the media and automatically becomes the cause célèbre of the local newspaper. I mean, that's a pretty tough road to hoe right now.
Yeah, and if I could take just a moment here, I want to say something to anybody who would, I mean, like really, really grumble and say, you know, this just isn't acceptable, I don't know what the problem is, you know, I'm so tired of this. What are you doing to increase vocations? Are you praying daily that God will raise up native vocations in your city, in your parish, in your diocese? See, here's the thing, you know, people want more priests, but far too few people, you know, are doing anything about it. The easiest thing we can do, and Jesus himself said, pray the Lord of the harvest to send more laborers. You know, the easiest thing we can do every day, get up, say, Jesus, please give us more priests. Amen. It's as easy as that. There's a lot more we could do, but it's not hard.
Have dioceses instituted programs of prayer for vocations? Is this something that's happening?
Some have, and to no, you know, won't be any surprise, they're the ones getting a lot of vocations. A lot of them are doing various things, like they'll send parishes, for example, will send a particular, like a chalice home with a family or a vocations cross or some kind of reminder, and then that family prays during that week for vocations, and they give it to somebody else. And then a lot of dioceses are instituting Eucharistic adoration in parishes for vocations. And like I say, it comes as no surprise that the fruit is there. How would God not answer a prayer for more priests? I mean, that's not the God I worship.
No, and also, of course, I'm talking with Jerry Usher about his apostolic effort in regard to bringing in more vocations to the priesthood and the religious life. We haven't yet mentioned one of the greatest factors in vocations, and that is the Catholic colleges and universities. I think it's pretty apparent that there are certain Catholic colleges and universities that have been at the forefront of the, not creation, I think that's a bad word, but in eliciting vocations among their students. Is that the case?
Oh, for sure. And here again, I mean,
Franciscan University, the college you attend being one of them.
Yeah, at Franciscan University, I'm certainly biased because I went there, but I don't know that there's a, you know, a Catholic college or university in this country or maybe beyond that has whose alumni have gone out and had the direct impact on the church, on evangelization, and all of this stuff. I may be wrong, certainly no statistics to back that up, but one of the key areas is in vocations. I can guarantee you in the last 20, 30 years, hundreds of priests and men and women religious have graduated just from Franciscan University. Then you throw in, Belmont Abbey, Benedictine, Thomas Aquinas, Mary, Magdalene. I mean, I hate
Christendom to, would, you know, would argue with you.
Christendom, yeah, Christendom.
You know, but my observation is that given that Franciscan was already there when it was sort of reformed internally by the president, it was already there. It already had a history and had an alumnus and all that kind of thing. I would guess that of the recognized Orthodox Catholic College or University, Franciscan is probably the leader in terms of vocations. With Christendom, Thomas Aquinas, now Ave Maria, and I'm sure there are a number of vocations coming out of places like Notre Dame, because as often been said, you know, the students that go to Notre Dame are what keep it Catholic.
Yeah, right.
And so you have students that go through there and whatever, there are really good faculty members there, we know. There are some that aren't so anxious to ratify the Catholic worldview. And so they meet that. And certainly Georgetown would have probably a strong record of vocations. Am I just guessing here, or do you have any data on that?
Yeah, I don't really have any data on, really any schools for that matter. But one thing that I'm excited about, and this kind of touches on what we're discussing here, the next generation of college students, you're familiar with CARA, I'm sure, the Center for Applied Research in the
United States. Yeah, and I'm also acquainted with the fact that sometimes their methods of gathering data is not always the most reliable, but go ahead.
Well, never mind. You just blew my point.
No, go ahead. Make your point. That's inside baseball for me to say that. I shouldn't have said it. Go ahead.
Right. No, and I think the point I was going to make is still valid. Whatever the numbers are, their surveys show if you extrapolate, and again, this is just generally speaking extrapolations, hard, actual numbers,
right.
But there are hundreds of thousands of young men and young women in this country alone who have seriously considered the priesthood of religious life. Now, if we consider that, it gets back to my question, what are we doing to encourage them, to support them, to inspire them? Sometimes that's all it takes, is to say to a young man or a young woman, hey, you have the qualities to a young man. I think you'd make a good priest. To a young woman, boy, you seem to really love your faith and love the Lord. Have you ever thought about being a sister? These kinds of things. So,
well, it's funny. I don't find that at all. I'm not reluctant to say that to somebody at all. If I meet somebody who has, like you say, certain qualities, a certain depth of spirituality, or even a little bit of naivete about it. And if they don't seem to be grasping onto the world, with both hands, I've often suggested vocations to people I meet. And in a couple of cases, I've had, students, many students, during my 15 years of teaching that went into the priesthood and the religious life. And most of that time, I wasn't in a Catholic school.
Mm-hmm.
I was in a Baptist school. The Baptists didn't really love. They didn't hate me for it, but they weren't real thrilled with it either.
Yeah, well, you're the type, though, D.L. Your personality would not shy away from making such a suggestion to a young man or young woman, and nor would it be for mine, but even sometimes parents are reluctant to support a vocation, and sometimes they even discourage it. So we just have to be on the lookout for young people who, you know, exhibit any qualities of a vocation. Maybe just suggest it to them, give them a good book, a good resource, subscription to Crisis Magazine, something like that.
Yeah, but how does a diocese actually go about finding young people? I mean, do they go to Catholic high schools and set up a table? You know, exactly how do they make contact with possible, with the priests of the future?
Well, there are a lot of ways, and some dioceses are a little more cutting edge than others on that. One trend I'm noticing is that in years past, a diocese would have its vocations page buried, you know, layers deep on their main website. I mean, you barely find the word vocations, and then when you found it, you know, it just wasn't really all that helpful. Now I know, at least in terms of vocation offices for the priesthood, they're creating their own specific websites just for vocations, and then they're getting that word out, like you say, by visiting Catholic high schools, even non-Catholic high schools, having discernment weekends, come and see weekends, vocation discernment groups in parishes, you know, attending Steubenville conferences and things like that. There are a lot of dioceses that are getting out there and really recruiting, and this is what the church needs to do. You know, the military does it quite well, and you know, just like our country has been, you know, threatened in so many ways in the last 10, 20 years, you know, so is the church. And young men need to be called to come to the church's aid. And, you know, our mother needs us, if you will.
It seems to me that a popular priest, you know, someone who's got some charisma, you know, got some, you know, positive energy, he's going to draw toward himself young men who, because of his witness, are going to imagine themselves in his shoes, doing what he does.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to me that's probably the moment when a perceptive priest with some sensitivity probably pops the question, so to speak. Is this the case?
Yeah, I like that scene you painted because it is so true. And that probably, if you were to list, you know, I don't know, top five, top ten, I think most important moments in a priest's or a seminarian's life, one of them will be, if it occurs to him, one of them will be when another priest or more than one priest just really takes an interest in him as a young person, as a young male who's, you know, searching, discerning, might exhibit the traits of a possible priestly vocation, and then actually say that to him. You know, I love being a priest. It's the greatest joy of my life. There hasn't been a day I've regretted this. You know, why don't you give it some thought? If you ever want to talk about it, I'm here to talk about it. And that could, I mean, somebody could be right on the fence, deal, you know, teetering one way or the other, and that could be that little gust of wind that blows him over in the direction of the priesthood.
Yeah, I want to remind our listeners that I'm talking to Jerry Usher, who is founder and president of Third Millennium Media, which has its own website, thirdmillenniummedia.com. But what we're talking about here is his apostolate for the priesthood and for the religious life, which is called Vocation Boom. It's a website that you can visit, vocationboom.com, a weekly radio show, and now a weekly television show. And the television show is at 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, which I guess the Protestants won't be watching it, and then which is replayed on Tuesday mornings at 2:30 a.m., which is 11:30 Pacific Time. And then on Thursday afternoons at 5:30, which is a good time for people who are coming home from work and maybe chopping vegetables in the kitchen or something to see what you've got. Now, give me an example of what to expect on your TV show. You must have guests. You interview them. What is your, you know, what is the way you approach your TV show?
Well, I'm grateful to EWTN. They put a nice set together, and so I open the show with a short little reflection on some aspect of the priesthood or vocations. That takes 2 or 3 minutes. Then I take a short break, welcome my guest onto the program, and the guests have been, for example, this past week, the first inaugural episode was Father Darren Merlino, who I mentioned before was the co-founder of that newsletter that has grown into Vocation Boom, so we kind of told the Vocation Boom story. I've got, for example, in these first 13 episodes, we flew in from Illinois, the parents of a priest who had just been ordained for 3 or 4 months. We have a couple of lay people join us on the program. I mentioned the Eastern Province Dominican Vocation Director. He is on one of the episodes. We're going to be taping more in October and in January, and we actually have a couple of bishops who are going to be joining us in January, one of whom contacted us and said, I'd like to be on your radio and TV show.
Who is that?
Bishop Michael Burbidge of Raleigh, North Carolina.
Oh, he's a great bishop. That's wonderful.
Yeah, he was on the staff at St. Charles Seminary when I was there, and you know, he heads up one of the bishop's committees on religious or vocations or something, so we were quite thrilled when he contacted us and said, I want to be on your show. That just tells us, Dio, we're getting a little bit of traction, I think. So, and then I take a second short break after about 18 minutes with my guest, and then Dr. Matthew Bunsen, with whom I'm sure you're familiar,
sure.
He comes on. He's on at the end of every episode for about 3 or 4 minutes. We talk about some historical or some sort of aspect of the priesthood, history of the priesthood, vocations, the seminary system, things like that. So that's a little snapshot of the format of the program.
Seems to me that one of the challenges that the church is facing, especially in the United States, is that some of the really important lay organizations and lay institutions like the Knights of Columbus are simply not as strong as they once were. And there's 3 or 4 that I could name, but certainly at some point they were responsible for generating vocations. And I would imagine, in spite of all the good work the Knights are doing now, they just simply don't play that role anymore.
Yeah, it's on their radar, Dio, but I think you're right. I mean, they've got a lot of things going on. Here's my assessment of that. When you get up to the supreme level, I mean, the Knights are they're focused, they're dedicated, they give tons of money to everything. As you start to get down, all the way down, you get down to the council level, that's when, you know, we have to really try and motivate Knights to take this, I think, a little bit more seriously in some cases. Some councils do a great job. I was supported when I was a seminarian. My Knights Council, once a year or so would send me $500, and, you know, it couldn't have come at a better time. And so there are some out there. In fact, our first TV show aired the other day, and I got an email right away from a Knight in Northern California, Oakland Bay Area, says, hey, I'm doing all kinds of stuff up here to promote vocations. How can we collaborate? So
if you can sort of grab on to the tentacles of the various Knights councils around the country and network with those councils that are doing something about this, that would be a very powerful kind of collaboration.
Sure, that's one of our goals, definitely. I'm a fourth degree Knight, so I want to work with the Knights, obviously the Sarah Club. There are other lay organizations.
Yeah, let's talk about Sarah, because Sarah, I happen to know the leadership in the Sarah Club, both nationally and internationally. And they have a lot of clout in the church itself, in the Vatican. And there is a lot of activity there in terms of conferencing. But what are they actually doing on the ground? Are you familiar with that?
Well, yeah, I was going to say, here's where organizations like the Knights, like the Sarah Club, I think need to kind of step forward a little bit. I mean, with technology, with social media, I mentioned earlier the modern-day Areopagus, as the young men are congregating on their smartphones and their iPads and on their laptops, and they got earplugs in their ears, and this is where we have to go to meet them. And God bless the Knights, and God bless the Sarah Club. Like I said, I'm a fourth-degree Knight.
Mm-hmm.
I've always supported and been supported by the Sarah Club. But, you know, they largely, they'll have, like, you know, clergy appreciation dinners and, you know, these sorts of things and, you know, maybe golf outings for seminarians and stuff. And those are all fantastic. I think they just need to lay on top of all of that more of a, like, a media-based social media outreach, going out into the culture and where finding where these guys are, because, you know, they're there primarily, it seems anyway, to support men who are, like, really seriously discerning or already in formation or already ordained. Now we need to figure out how are we going to go out, you know, into our high schools, onto the city streets, you know, and touch and reach these young guys who may be called but, you know, have no idea how to hear that call.
Jerry, I want to thank you for being my guest on Church and Culture today. And our listeners, I want to remind you of his website, vocationboom.com, his weekly radio show, his weekly television show, which started recently and can be seen on Sundays at 8 a.m. with replays on Tuesday at 2:30 a.m. and 5:30 p.m. That's all Eastern time. Jerry, thanks for being on my show.
Anytime, Deal. God bless.
And to all of you that are listening, please hang around, because after this break, we'll have another very interesting guest.
This program is made possible in part by CatholicBusinessPages.com, dedicated to helping grow businesses for a strong community of faith and Christian values. CatholicBusinessPages.com is your online directory resource for connecting you with businesses that have taken a strong stand to support those values that impact our lives. If Christian principles make a difference in your life, then CatholicBusinessPages.com will link you to business professionals who care about the values of our nation. CatholicBusinessPages.com, a great place to get connected.
The following is a message brought to you by the Catholic Biblical School of Michigan.
When you look for me, you will find me. Yes, when you seek me with all your heart, you will find me with you, says the Lord. This incredible promise made to us through the prophet Jeremiah leads us to ask, how do we seek the Lord our God with all our heart? One way that Scripture reveals is for us to live a life in constant awareness of God's presence in our daily lives. St. Paul put this into action when he wrote, "Rejoice always, pray unceasingly, in all circumstances give thanks, for this is the will of God for you in Christ Jesus." This is more challenging than it sounds. Let us pray that we may become people who seek God and are found by Him through our rejoicing, prayer, and thanksgiving. To learn more about how God's Word helps us in our daily lives, visit the Catholic Biblical School of Michigan on Facebook or at cbsmich.org.
Light of the East, weekends on Ave Maria Radio.
I'm Father Thomas Loya. This week on Ave Maria, how can motherhood preserve virginity and death be the herald of life? These are mysteries celebrated in the beginning of the new liturgical year of the Byzantine tradition.
Saturday evenings at 8:30 and Sunday mornings at 9 on 990 WDEO Ave Maria Radio.
Hi, this is Father John Ricardo, inviting you to join me as we explore some of the deepest questions that arise in our hearts, questions that shape the way we think, the way we speak, and the way we live. For all of these questions, Christ is the answer.
On the next Christ is the Answer program, Father John Ricardo continues the catechetical series titled RCA for Catholics. It's a series for Catholic Christians who want to delve deeper into their faith. On this 11th program, Father Ricardo begins a four-part sub-series on prayer. Listen to Christ is the Answer Wednesday evenings at 8, Saturday evenings at 7, and Sunday mornings at 11 on Ave Maria Radio and AveMariaRadio.net on the Internet.
Christ is the way, the truth, and the life. He is the image of the invisible God. He points us to our destiny. He reveals the dignity of the human person. He is the one who makes known the Father. Christ is the Answer.
Christ is the Answer is brought to you by the Ave Maria Communications Guild.
Here's a family minute with child psychologist Dr. Ray Guarendi from Ave Maria Radio.
Is discipline kind? Poor discipline. It gets a bad name these days, doesn't it? Parents feel mean when we discipline. We feel guilty. We feel incompetent. The experts are always telling you, well, you know, discipline is kind of a last resort. Set up a win-win situation first. Use active listening. Try an I message. Bargain and negotiate using five blue smiley faces instead of three.